stand here this morning at this defining moment that is now millions of Virginians walking together.
My story is your story. And I did not just want New Yorkers to hear my story. I wanted them to feel my story. I wanted them to know I am you.
We have got to come together. We have got to put the petty politics of the past that have hurt people behind us so that we can focus on a brighter future.
Although it was not my intention, we have sent the message to the entire country. Every single time it's gone too far off track, the people of this state have pushed, pulled, and prodded it right back to where it needs to be.
If we truly want to deliver change, we need every one of us shaping our future. Thank you for placing your trust in me to serve as the next mayor of Boston.
I want you to believe again. Let's walk differently. Let's hold our heads up. Let's have a step in our pace. Because we are New Yorkers, we must believe in who we are.
When every vote is counted, and every vote will be counted, we hope to have a celebration.
I'm Melissa Harris Perry, and this is The Takeaway on the day after Election Day. Here to break it all down is Crystal Ball, host of Breaking Points with Crystal and Sagar, and author of The Populist Guide to 2020. Thanks for being here, Crystal.
My pleasure, Melissa.
And also with us is Christina Greer, Associate Professor of Political Science at Fordham University, co-host of the podcast FAQ NYC, and author of the book Black Ethnics, Race, Immigration, and the Pursuit of the American Dream. Great to have you back on the show, Christina.
Always great to see you, Melissa.
All right, Crystal, let's start with you. Let's talk about Virginia. What do you see in these results?
Well, Virginia Democrats had a lot going against them in this election. So let's start with the things that were sort of out of their control. The history for parties in power winning the Virginia governor's race is very, very dim. So they had historical trends going against them. They had some national wins going against them as people, you know, 70% of the country says that the country's on the wrong track and Democrats are in charge. Some of that's their fault. Some of it's not their fault, but that's sort of the national wins. But then you also have a candidate in Terry McAuliffe who really didn't run on much other than being anti-Trump. And they tried to tie Glenn Youngkin to Trump. And in the end, that clearly wasn't enough here. So, you know, Democrats ran a sort of uninspiring campaign, thinking that they could just use the same playbook that they used to win the presidency. Clearly didn't work really in any region of the state. McAuliffe slid from Biden's results in every single region of Virginia. And as far as why it matters for people outside of the state, Virginia has been a pretty consistent bellwether for national trends and the way things are headed in recent history. So I think Democrats are in very, very big trouble for the midterms.
Christina, I always feel like on, you know, when we're doing election analysis, especially the very next day, as political scientists, there's always like this challenge between wanting to talk about, you know, what we know in these like big models, things like surge and decline versus really explaining each individual matchup, you know, and trying to understand what happened internally. As you're kind of looking both at Virginia and then also at the razor thin race in New Jersey, what are you seeing, Chrissy?
Right, Melissa, I think that there are going to be a lot of projections about, you know, 2022 and what happened last night. But I do think we need to look at each race individually. Terry McAuliffe, honestly, I don't think was a great candidate. He undercut two really qualified black women because so many people in the party thought, oh, we can't have a black woman at the top of the ticket. We know that when a black person is at the top of the ticket, mobilization and participation drastically increase. So maybe Virginians need to think about that. Totally agree with Crystal. There has to be messaging other than we're not Trump. We have seen that racial animus and racist talking points really do work with Republicans. They just come in, you know, a Patagonia vest now and fleece and, you know, sort of in a packaging that's not Donald Trump. But it's worked in different races across the country, as we saw. In New Jersey, though, we have to remember there's never been a Democrat to Democrat handoff since 1976 or so. So, you know, the succession of a Democrat to another fellow Democrat in the gubernatorial race is not something that New Jerseyans are accustomed to doing. So so this razor-thin loss, even though Murphy's an incumbent, goes with the pattern of what New Jersey has historically done. And so when we think about, you know, the loss of India Walton potentially in Buffalo, that doesn't mean that progressive politics are dead. It just means that a writing candidate, Byron Brown, and the support of, you know, certain institutional Democrats, that also works. When you think about, you know, Eric Adams in New York, yes, he's a Democrat with, you know, a very weak Republican challenger, but, you know, he's more of a moderate Democrat. So I think we have to look at the cities and the states that we're analyzing to see the nuance and the messaging that actually works. And we know in Virginia, you know, randomly talking about Toni Morrison and Beloved and critical race theory out of nowhere and giving it life and giving it air is something that really resonated with Republican voters. And per our colleague Jane Jun at USC, you know, white women do vote Republican. There is no gender gap. White women vote for the Republican Party by and large, and it's people of color, specifically black women, who pull Democrats across the finish line time and time again. And so we have to really think about issues that will mobilize the base of the Democratic Party, which is largely African-Americans, but more specifically African-American women, to get them out to the polls as well, which they have done, and which they did in that race, by the way. But it's really thinking about the racial animus that motivates white voters.
Crystal, I want to pick up on something that Chrissy's saying here about the Toni Morrison commercial. I know you've been following the Virginia race pretty closely, or you followed the Virginia race pretty closely. Why don't you just sort of, if any of our listeners do not know what that reference is, can you explain the role of critical race theory, Crystal, in this particular election cycle?
I would say overall, this race was effectively about nothing, because you had the Terry McAuliffe campaign trying to make it about a candidate, Donald Trump, who's not on the ballot. And you had the Youngkin campaign inventing an issue out of thin air with help from, you know, a lot of conservative media outlets, which is this concern, this ginned up concern over critical race theory being taught in schools, which is not even a part of the curriculum in Virginia. So this was all, you know, sort of invented out of whole cloth just to make people really upset. I do want to say that I think the concerns over education weren't just centered on critical race theory, though. You also had concerns around how and when schools were closed and kids still being quarantined and still having a bumpy school year this year that I think also played into education becoming a really significant issue in the race. And this is one of these instances where, frankly, Democrats should learn a bit from Republicans. Republicans found something that was really important to their voters, even though it's not a majority position in the state, but it was extraordinarily motivating for their voters to turn out. And turnout was, for them, extraordinarily high. And they also won independents, and they won white women without a college degree by 50 points. Democrats didn't do anything to try to convince their voters that this was really important for them and their lives and their kids and their futures to turn up at the ballot box. And you layer on top of that, I think, from the national level, because I frankly think that all these races are, you know, pretty nationalized at this point, the fact that Democrats have routinely promised basic reforms, things like, oh, we're going to have paid leave, or, oh, we're going to have voting rights reform, or, oh, we're going to have $15 minimum wage, that they then, once they have power in Washington or in Virginia or at the state level, they then find all kinds of excuses not to do it. So I saw a quote from one voter who was a lifelong Democrat who literally said to a journalist, I don't know why I bother voting for these people, because when I do go and vote and I do the work and I invest the emotional energy in them, they never come through with what they promise. So one other stat from Virginia that I think is significant here is, you know, you sort of live by the suburban white voter and you die by the suburban white voter. And that's clearly where the party has focused a lot of their energy at this point. And part of those politics has just been ignoring the interest of a majority, not just of this state, but of all states. Virginia is a suburban state. If you were going to win with that strategy anywhere, it would be in Virginia. So it just exposes, I think, the utter failure of the direction that Democrats have been going in, pandering to this one particular group.
Christina, I'm wondering if you could also maybe center Joe Biden in that analysis a little bit. I'm interested if Crystal's making this argument about, okay, you know, we're lifelong Democrats, we come out, we vote, right? This being a Democratic, you know, Virginia voter who might be saying this to themselves, but nothing seems to change. I'm wondering if this is an indication also of President Biden truly having non-existent coattails going forward for the rest of his party into 2022.
Yeah, I think that's a strong point, Melissa and Crystal. I mean, we saw and we consistently see it during the presidential election. You know, the Democrats are chasing these white voters that left, you know, after Jimmy Carter. They're gone. Forget about them. You know, I always say dance with the person who brought you to the party. And the Democratic Party, by and large, refuses to do so. I think, you know, because Joe Biden's poll numbers are relatively low, and we hear in Joe Biden's rhetoric, especially during the campaign phase, you know, he really does think about the heart of, you know, America and the Democratic Party is, you know, these hard workers from Scranton. It's like, no, these are, you know, these are immigrants and women of color who work in cities. I mean, that's the one of the beating hearts of the Democratic Party. And the messaging and the fervor just isn't there. And so if Joe Biden can't wrangle his Senate and his House, I mean, I need him to be a little more LBJ. I need Chuck Schumer to be a little more LBJ and really, you know, stop catering to one or two holdouts and get firm and figure out a way to get a win. I think if Joe Biden had gone into this election season with some concrete wins for Democrats to say, we actually do care about voting rights or a woman's right to choose or various policy issues, whether it's healthcare or education, you name it, or crime and policing and safety, that would make a stronger case as to why Democrats deserve to be at the top of the ticket and leading these cities and these states across the country. So I think there's going to need to be a reshuffling of the deck, a real clear identification of what the priorities are of the Democratic Party, and really looking at state by state who actually comes out and turns out for this party, really articulates the vision and helps implement the vision of the party. And if you continue to ignore those people, we're going to continue to see the Trumpian ideology permeate throughout states and win races across the country. And Democrats will scratch their heads and say, how did that happen? Well, if we can't pass a Comprehensive Voting Rights Act, right, and we know that Republicans are systemically trying to institutionally take away our right to vote, this is how you're going to also lose races time and time again.
Crystal, let me just jump on that on Trump. So we've talked a little bit about Biden here. Did Trump play Virginia just right by making the endorsement but not showing up and doing a whole lot of work in the state?
100%. And I think Democrats thought they saw the model of California, where you had a much more inflammatory candidate in Larry Elder, and the sort of like, let's freak everybody out about Trumpism and California thing worked. Number one, Virginia is not California. Number two, Glenn Youngkin, you know, he wore his dad vest and they just weren't able to freak people out and scare them about Glenn Youngkin the way that they were about Larry Elder in California. And the last thing, and I'll say, you know, picking up on some of the points that were made by Christine, is former President Obama went to New Jersey to campaign there. And his message was sort of like, you know, we're not promising too much. People were disappointed in me and they didn't show up. And it ended up being a really bad situation, almost putting the blame on the voter. Listen, you might be disappointed in us and we might not be delivering that much, but you still got to show up and vote.
Yeah, that may not get folks out. Crystal Ball is the host of Breaking Points with Crystal and Sagar, and author of The Populist Guide to 2020. Chrissy Greer is Associate Professor of Political Science at Fordham University. Thanks so much to both of you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Melissa.
Thanks so much, Melissa.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.